The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft.
In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, I speak to Deirdre Hudson. Deirdre is a brand new CMO in the last 6 months or so of a company called Payability, which provides really great financial services to e-commerce sellers on the Amazon and Shopify networks. And we have a fantastic conversation where Deirdre and I talk about what it's like to be a new CMO, kinds of things that we should think about in the changing world around us, how process is important. And she tells us a great story about how she learned about the podcast, me, and our book, and posted about it on LinkedIn. So I think you'll enjoy that story. I really hope you enjoy the episode. It was a great conversation, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Hey, Deirdre, thanks so much for being with me on the Next CMO podcast. Really excited to have you here. And it would be great to hear a little bit more about your background and about Payability.
Absolutely. Thanks, Peter, for having me. I'm a huge fan of the Next CMO, so really glad to have this opportunity to chat with you and your listeners. So my background, I have been involved in marketing for a little over 20 years, and I guess interesting about my story is that I started out wanting to be an accountant. I was in high school and I was fascinated with the realm of accounting, and I used to write letters to the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. That's back when people actually wrote letters. I would request information, and I was just excited to go to college and study accounting. As it happens, while I was putting myself through undergrad, I was working in the membership and marketing department of a human rights organization. And the person I was working with, his name was Lee Weiner. He was a brilliant statistician. And we were doing lots of direct mail and lots of kind of demographic and psychographic analysis on different marketing segmentations. And I fell in love with marketing. And I fell in love with marketing from a data perspective because I love the fact that one row of numbers in an Excel spreadsheet could indicate an entirely different type of person than that second row of numbers. So I switched my major over to marketing, and it's been just marketing since then.
Well, that's amazing. And the funny thing, it reminds me of the Monster.com commercial about 20 years ago, where I think they have all these kids that they're interviewing saying, I want to grow up and be an accountant. And it's like the most... So I can't believe there actually was someone who wanted to grow up to be an accountant. So that's fascinating. And of course, the number focus and the analytical focus, I'm sure, has served you quite well. And now you also have an exciting first milestone because you actually just recently accepted your first CMO job. Is that right?
That is correct. I had the good fortune to start working with Payability in May of this year, and it's been just an amazing ride. It's a great group of people. Our co-founder, Keith Smith, is a serial entrepreneur, and he built this company about 6.5 years ago. And what we do that is so interesting to me that I really find fascinating is that we offer funding to e-commerce sellers, so people who are selling on marketplaces and platforms like Amazon and Shopify. But what we do that I think is even beyond just the offering of the funding is that we help people to realize their dreams. Amazon sellers, Shopify sellers, they're coming to that platform and they're starting businesses and they're doing this with the hopes of fulfilling a dream, either having a secondary form of income or being able to work for themselves and build their own businesses. And we've become a really strong part of that by providing the funding that they need and the working capital that they need in order to grow that business. So I just find that this just a wonderful story. I'm so connected to that human element part. And I've been really fortunate to be able to work with this group of people and then transitioned from the role that I originally started in, which was a VP of growth marketing, and transitioned into a CMO role. So it's been exciting. The past 7 months have been incredibly exciting, and I can't wait to see what else we do next year.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the company is really interesting in that you provide capital to people who are looking to grow their businesses, and very specifically people who are e-commerce sellers. And is it exclusively Amazon? I can't remember. Is it a variety of different platforms you work with?
It's primarily Amazon, but we do work with some Shopify sellers, and we are hopefully going to be expanding into different marketplaces as well. But for now, it's primarily Amazon.
Well, that's great. Anyone who is starting up a business in its early stages knows that access to capital, especially if you are selling products online, is something, or even if you're selling services and need marketing resources, as an example, those are extremely important and critical to actually drive growth. So it's great to hear, and it's amazing the kind of innovative companies that have sprung up to fill in the gap to service this market, which is really exciting. So tell me a little bit. So background in sort of this analytical side, we're in a growth marketing role. What was the transition like? What was the sort of the biggest surprise when you went from the growth marketing head to the CMO position? What changed the most for you?
That's a really interesting question. It was actually, the transition was a bit of a surprise to me. It's something that Keith and I had talked about when I first began interviewing for the position. And honestly, it's something that I didn't know if I wanted, because CMOs have the shortest shelf life in the C-suite.
That's right.
So I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't quite sure I wanted to pursue that. But, you know, I thought that I would have a really good opportunity just to be able to continue to lead the team. And I guess one of the biggest transition points is just really taking a step back and being able to just have additional time to just think and strategize about, you know, where we want to go, what do we want to do, how do we want to frame and carve our marketing efforts going forward. And what does that overall strategy and vision look like? I think that it's important, if you're leading a team or in any kind of leadership capacity, is to be able to have a vision and be able to communicate that vision and to get people to buy into that vision. So I think that's been just the biggest transition point.
Yeah, so the focus on sort of defining the vision and the... Now, it's interesting, because did you find that in that transition, were there things that you felt like you needed to personally develop as far as skills to get there to that next level? Or do you feel fully prepared just having spent time as an analytical and a growth?
No, definitely not feeling fully prepared, which is, I think that's part of the fun. I think that if I was in a role that, you know, I knew backwards and forwards exactly how to do it and exactly what to expect, then, you know, it would be pretty dull and boring. So yeah, I think that one of the biggest things about transitioning into this role is, for me, is still having my hands on the data. And that kind of goes back to my original story of basically how I got here, is that as I was formulating my career early on, and this is, you know, kind of after I fell in love with marketing from a data perspective, I really formulated this idea that good marketing was based on getting data, analyzing data, and using data. So when I started my career, I was really into the analytical side, and we were doing lots of, as I mentioned, lots of database marketing analysis and segmentation analysis. And then from there, I wanted to move into a role that allowed me to focus on getting the data. So understanding, you know, how data is stored and relational databases and understanding ETLs and things like that. And then I moved into the using data part. So now formulating campaigns and putting together marketing strategies that's going to help us reach our target audience. So as part of even being part of the CMO, I'm still very heavily involved in the data, really getting my hands dirty in the data, understanding, you know, how our customers are, how our prospect audience is coming to us, how they're interacting with us, what does that journey look like, and how we can utilize that for optimizing our marketing campaigns. I hope that answered your question, because once I get started talking about marketing, I can go all day.
No, it did. And I think there are a couple of things that were important to point out that you mentioned. One is that you didn't know all the answers, and that there's this leap that you have to take to get into a new position. And I think that the people who are willing to take that leap, by the way, are the ones who are most successful typically, because they're willing to take the leap, because you never learn anything new by definition if you don't try something new. And it's not like you can go, you know, interesting, you don't go to school to be a marketing executive. You go to school to be a marketer, maybe. I went to school to study physics, but that's right. A different story for a different day. And then ultimately you have to sort of learn things on the fly. And so tell me about, I actually met you, of course, through one of your sources of learning, right? So through our book.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I feel like I'm leading the witness here too much. This is, you know, you don't have to say nice things about my book now, but maybe you will. Let's see.
No, I really do want to share that story. I think it's a funny story. So I came across Next CMO, your book, maybe about a year ago, and I was in my previous role. And I was very attracted to the book based on the title. The book is called The Next CMO, A Guide to Operational Marketing Excellence, right? And I was so intrigued by that because it didn't talk about becoming a CMO through being an expert in branding or being an expert in inbound or outbound marketing. It talked about being the next CMO by developing strategies and tactics for operational excellence. Now, I focused about the past 7 or 10 years of my career on demand generation marketing. And the way that I kind of framed out demand generation marketing is that it's based on 4 pillars. And that's people, process, programs, and performance. I think that process is kind of the unsung hero in growth and in scalable growth. So I was very attracted to this idea that you could achieve these leaps and bounds in your career by focusing on an area that a lot of people just don't focus on. So that was definitely part of my learning path. And as I read the book, I just became more excited about the things that I was reading, because I had thoughts of these ideas and kind of part here and the piece there. But the book really brought it all together for me. And as I started implementing the things that I was reading in the book and just kind of implementing those strategies and absorbing that mindset, I started to see tangible results in my team that I was managing at the time. And then being able to take that with me onto to Payability, and you know, from the VP of Growth Marketing role, and then into the CMO role. So yes, so you've been a part of my growth. And when I posted my LinkedIn post with the picture of the book, and the book has my colored tabs, and it's dog-eared, and pages folded down, and I just basically said, I guess it works.
Exactly. And I said, we found it. I think you tagged Plana in the book, or maybe even me, I can't remember. And so I saw the post and I said, oh my God, I have to meet this woman. And so it was amazing to hear the story. And of course, really exciting to when you put a lot of work into something, it's amazing to see that it has a little bit of impact here and there. And I'll tell you, my secret sauce, one of my co-authors, Scott, who's my CMO here at Plana, has spent, like me, decades leading marketing teams. But more importantly, he actually teaches marketing planning and marketing strategy at the University of Massachusetts. He's on a hiatus right now. He's a visiting professor. But he actually spent a lot of time sort of developing his methods, his curriculum, and we sort of mashed the minds together around our joint experience and put this together. And we found that there was a little bit of a gap there. So anyway, I'm thrilled that you enjoyed the book, and I'm sure it doesn't deserve any credit for your CMO elevation, but I was very kind of you to mention the book in the same breath, which was a lot of fun. So I could talk about me all day long, but I'd love to maybe pivot here and talk a little bit about sort of how you think about, now you've got this new CMO job in the last 6 months or so, and now you're coming into a new year, right? So you've got a new year. We're about to kick off 2022 when we're recording this anyway. How are you thinking about putting your thoughts and your strategies and your plans together for the coming year as a relatively new CMO?
Great question. So the way that I am thinking about 2022, and just kind of as a backup for that, when I first started with Payability, and this is a strategy that I have come to utilize in working with various different companies, I really like to spend the first few months just understanding what's going on. You know, I have a very humble attitude of, you know, the company has been in business, they've been successful. It's not for me to come in and just try to get rid of everything or change everything or turn everything on its head without having a good grasp of what's going on and, you know, what's been working, what hasn't been working. So I did spend the first few months when I arrived at Payability just really trying to understand, talking to a lot of different people, trying to understand different facets and different aspects of the business. So after spending some time doing that and just really getting that basic or that foundational level of understanding, I've developed a strategy for where we need to go and where I think that we want to go for 2022. And what I am envisioning us doing is really focusing on developing and maintaining and strengthening strong relationships with our customers. I'm very customer focused, and I think that it all begins with the customer. And especially in our case, where we're offering funding to Amazon and to Shopify sellers, but they may not necessarily be at that point where they need funding when we have our first interaction with them. So it's important that we find a way to develop and keep a presence in front of our target audience, develop a way of maintaining and starting a relationship with them. So those are the things that I think that we're going to focus on for next year. It's how do we develop these stronger relationships with our target audience, and how do we get them to connect with us a little bit sooner in the process, right? Because we look at our seller's journey, and that usually starts from that first point of interaction. But I'm very curious, interested in what happens before that interaction, what's going on in their lives before they actually interact with us. So I'm going to be very devoted and very focused on that full seller's journey, really looking at how we can be a part of what we're calling micro ecosystem, because there's a lots of different systems that an Amazon seller interacts with along their journey, from sourcing product to worrying about inventory and pricing and research. So how can we be a part of that and be embedded in each of those micro ecosystems and do that in a way that is authentic, but also relevant?
It's really interesting that you bring this up, because I was just debating some of these concepts with the team. And in the thing that you bring up is the idea that as a marketer, what you're trying to do is you're trying to create this opportunity, this environment where you can start a dialogue with your customer early enough in the consideration process so that when they're ready to consider, they can actually transact. And as in a sales role, what you want to do is you want to encourage people. So you want to sell them as soon as you know their name. And so how do you deal with that tension? Because, of course, and I'm asking you this out of necessity, because we're dealing with this right now. Our sales team is chomping at the bit to try to talk as many people as possible. And at the same time, strategically, what we're trying to do is we try to really build a community, build. It's through our content creation that we're seeing here, our book, our community that we have, et cetera. It's really about building that community out there. But there's this tension between marketing that has sort of a long-term strategic view and sales who says, I want that right now. I need to convert that. So how do you deal with that without sort of alienating the customers by reaching out to them too soon before they're really ready to buy?
That's a really good question. And I think that, you know, part of that goes back to that age-old conundrum of the sales and marketing relationship, right? And kind of demystifying that relationship. So I will say that we have a really good relationship with our internal sales partners, and we stay in constant communication with them. We have funnels built out, and we have points of demarcation. So we're, you know, kind of marketing owns that relationship, and then kind of sales then takes over that relationship. So we have clear demarcation points. And I think that the way that we do that, and we're still working on this, you know, to be honest, is, you know, how do we do that? And that's to understand what channel, that really comes down to understanding who our customers are and where they live, right? So that we can be in those places, and that we can be there with the right messaging, and that we can really kind of guide them along that journey so that we know when they've taken a particular action, this is the point where, okay, this is a hand-raising action that's indicative of a person that's ready to talk to a salesperson, and then we definitely hand that over to our sales team. So I think it's that combination of things, right, like really just understanding who our target audience is, where they are, where they spend their time, starting to build that relationship, and then having that good internal relationship.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to think about it. And really having a clear set of definitions around who does what to whom is pretty important, obviously. There is a natural tension for salespeople to want to engage as soon as possible. And sometimes you just have to understand that, where the right role is and the right time to engage. So another thing I was thinking about recently, and Deirdre and I had a chance to chat the other day too, and we were talking about the meta environment that we're in the fact that in fact you saw some acceleration in your business because of the pandemic, because lots of people wanted to start businesses, as an example, which is really fantastic. And hopefully that's a trend that's going to stick over time. But as you look out into the coming years, year in years, and particularly I purposely added the S there, what are the things that you think about that may be changing in the world around you that you need to think about that may have an impact on the way you think about your marketing?
That's a really interesting question. You know, for the past several months, it's been all about supply chain and how the supply chain is impacting business, you know, not just brick and mortar businesses, but e-com businesses. So to think about, you know, what may be next, you know, what's the next thing that we're going to have to concern ourselves with? I think it's going to mainly just be the fallout from, you know, what do we do now? I mean, we've come from, if you think about, we've had kind of back-to-back really explosive things happening in the world and in the market, right? So we've coming off the pandemic and people learning how to shop and live and survive, you know, in a more digital fashion. So coming off of that, and then we've gotten into the supply chain issues. So I think that for next, it's really going to be, what does our normal look like? And, you know, what does this quote unquote new normal look like? Are we going to continue to work in hybrid roles? And what does that mean for our day-to-day digital lives? Are we going to go back to being fully, you know, everyone fully working and living and working together as we did before the pandemic? And just kind of understanding, what does this look like? I think there may be just some uncertainty of, you know, we thought that, you know, we didn't know what the pandemic was. We couldn't anticipate that. And then we couldn't anticipate the supply chain issue. So I think it's just kind of getting back to some semblance of a new normal so that people know how to work and live and shop and get the things that they need.
I think it's a good way to think about it. The reality is that I think most marketing leaders need to get their head around is that there's always some major disruption in the world. There's always some change. And hopefully it doesn't come alongside with a lot of human suffering, like in the pandemic, as an example, or some economic challenges and structural challenges like the supply chain issues that we're dealing with. But there are always changes that are going to happen in our environment. And I think one of the roles for a marketing leader is to, one, sort of always be looking into the horizon to see what's happening and what's changing. And two, really start to build your plan and your process in a way that can change. And knowing when to change is always a really difficult thing. So as an example, as I think about my plans, right, I've got things like my strategy, which is my business strategy, which is the high level thing, my business goals, which are sort of that next level of what am I trying to achieve that's going to help support my strategy, the marketing strategy that I'm going to use to achieve those marketing goals, and then sort of the specific plans and campaigns related to that. So when do you change which of those things is a really difficult question that you need to think about. And people think about changing their marketing mix all the time. But at some point, you need to think about, well, does my strategy need to change? Does my marketing strategy need to change? Do my goals need to change? Or does my overall business strategy need to change? And that's a very difficult place to be. And I could see that in your world in Payability, there's some really exciting things in that market, because it feels like there's an ongoing trend of people the barrier to start a new business has gone way, way down. And I can't believe it's not going to continue to build and accelerate. So that presents a massive opportunity, but it may affect ultimately how you think about, in a positive way, how do I grow beyond this thing? You know, I've got now financial services that I offer people. Are there these other things that you can, as you start to predict what's going on in the world, that you can do? How do you adapt your plan over time? And I don't know how much you've had those discussions yet, but they're really important ones, I think, to have as a CMO to think about how you affect that strategy overall.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. And that goes to, I think, what we were speaking about earlier in terms of, you know, we're trying to develop and build those relationships with our audience before they need us, right? So being able to have those types of relationships and being able to offer different services, you know, potentially beyond funding to help them grow and to help solidify that relationship so that when they do grow and as they do change, Payability can still continue to be a part of that growth and of that relationship. And I think that by focusing on the customer, no matter what happens, if your focus is on the customer, then you should be well positioned to be able to weather change. Because as you said, and as we know, the only constant is change, and change is inevitable. But if we're focused constantly on the customer and understanding what their motivations are, what their drivers are, what their needs are, then we can continue to grow a lot.
One of the things I wanted to make sure I asked you, Deirdre, too, is a lot of people talk about sort of the T marketer, right? Someone who's got super deep in one area and then broad in others. And your depth is around growth. So what do you think every marketer should be thinking about when it comes to putting together their plan for growth marketing in their function? I don't know, that may be the most vague question in the world, but I'd love to tap into your mind as a growth marketer by history, how you think about that. What should we all be thinking about when it comes to putting together our growth plans?
Yeah, not to be too obvious, but, you know, I do think it comes back to the book and the operational excellence. I think that in order to grow, you need to be able to scale. And if you're going to scale, you need to have a set of processes and procedures in place that allows you to do the things you're trying to do. I mean, just a very simplified or oversimplified example that I'm sure lots of companies can relate to is that going to a trade show, for example, and working at the trade show, working at a conference, coming back to the office, you've got a list of leads. What do you do with them, right? If you don't have a process in place for how that lead handled and who's handling it and what does that nurturing plan look like and what does that conversion plan look like, then you're not going to be able to really leverage the fruit of that conference. So very basic, you know, that's a very basic example, but it is an example of, you know, if you're going to grow and you're going to try to achieve growth, you need to be able to scale. And if you are going to scale, you can't do that by having to basically reinvent the wheel every time, right? So every time I go to a conference, I need to come back and then decide, okay, sales is going to do this and marketing's going to do that, or who's going to take this conversation. If I already know what that process looks like, I'm much more agile. I can react faster. I can get out to market with those customers faster. And then I don't have to worry about what are we going to do with this. I can move on to the next thing. So I think that path to growth is scalability.
Yeah, it's a really great point. And it's interesting. One of the things that I wanted to highlight based on your response there is the idea of having a standard way and a process and get things done. And interestingly, I find that a lot of marketers struggle with doing things the same way and doing the same things more than once. Because they tend to be super creative people and want to always do something new. And that can be a new process. It can be a new campaign. The reality is, if something works, maybe you should keep doing it and refine it to get it a little bit better and maybe stop if it stops performing. But I find that a lot of people will do a bunch of different things and then not want to repeat because that isn't smart or creative. But the reality is that you see a lot of people who have, you know, their, you know, impressions set to one effectively for these campaigns. And whether that's a webinar that they do, they literally do it once. Why don't you do it six times? There are all these other people that didn't do it, as an example. But then having the standards and the processes behind it to make sure that you're not, you don't have any leaky pipes, and you're not going to miss some of the economic value that you created through your marketing and have it just spill on the floor because there isn't a good process to follow up. I think that's sort of the bane of existence of a lot of people, especially who were in the demand business, if they feel like it's not really being, not being handled and followed up on, that can be really frustrating for people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, one of the things that I used to tell, and I've, you know, talked about this at previous companies and this company as well, is that when you have the process in place, that actually frees up your brain and gives your brain space to think more creatively. So even though it seems like, you know, a process, this is why I say process is the unsung hero. It seems like having a process is kind of anathema to creativity. It's actually an enabler of creativity because now your brain is free to be creative because you don't have to think about the same thing over
that's
and over
exactly
again.
Right.
Now you have
I think
space
that's really
to be
great
able to
advice.
Think about new things.
And speaking of advice, and, you know, hard to believe, but we're already running up to the end of our scheduled time here. One of the things I like to ask everyone on this show is about what advice they would give to future, to current or aspiring CMOs. And so I'd love your thoughts, especially from your perspective, having just made that transition in the last year to the CMO role. What advice would you give to others who are either about to make that transition or already have been in the seat?
Well, I can continue to pound my process drum. I just want to really make sure that that's something that is not overlooked, because I really think that that is the key to success. But the other part really is, and this may sound a bit cheesy, but the other part really is surrounding yourself with a good team. Now, in my role as a CMO, you know, I know about the different types of marketing that we're doing. I've been doing different types of marketing, but I want to hire people who are smarter than me. I want to hire the best paid media person I can find. I want to hire the best email marketer I can find. I want them to run, you know, spin ropes around me in terms of their knowledge and their deep expertise in that subject. I want them to teach me things about that subject. So I would say surround yourself with the best team that you can. And don't be afraid to admit when you don't know something. And, you know, that's one thing. I think that, you know, we think that being in leadership roles, we're supposed to know more than the other person. But I don't mind not being the smartest person in the room if that someone else can bring something to me that I don't know and can help us as a team and as a company grow. So I
well, that, that's a lot. And I really appreciate it, because the you hit on a lot of things. And and obviously, I know that you are the queen of process appreciation, which is good. But beyond that, I think really resonates with me around surrounding yourself with people that are smarter, certainly deeper than you in other functions, because it's the only way that you can elevate beyond your own personal limitations is to augment your intelligence with other smart people. And that's what really makes the difference. And I've seen the best leaders do that pretty consistently. So that's really great advice. Well, I really wanted to thank you for being part of the show, for reading my book and posting about it. That was so fun. I really appreciated it, Deirdre. And I look forward to continuing our discussion off the podcast sometime in the future. And for those of you who are listening, if you have ideas for other guests, for other topics you'd like us to cover, just drop us a note at thenextcmo@planet.com. And I really encourage you all to join our community, which you can get to at the Planet website. And we have great follow-on discussions about the same stuff. So thanks again, Deirdre. Thanks for being part of the show.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really enjoyed it. Take care.